The following discussion is not necessarily the views of all involved. The goal is to start open and honest discussion in the Christian worldview. Like all things, weigh what you hear with what you know and join us in our pursuit for the truth. Enjoy the podcast.
We're just going to flop about on this episode,
Boss Baby's a terrible mess. Continue. The greatest myth is God is love. Put that on a t-shirt, you'll have conversations for days, dude.
No.
And that's myth. There you go.
That's myth. You completely missed the point.
All right, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Second Rate Saints podcast. I'm one of your hosts here, Caleb. We don't really have a square or a circle going on.
We bring
right
it up
now.
Every time we don't have four people.
I know. Man, things are going to be crazy when we have cameras.
Welcome to the Caleb Figures Out Triangles podcast.
The shapes were hard. Across from me is...
I'm Joel, and to my left...
I'm Colton, and to my left...
Me, Caleb.
Full circle, triangle, square.
Yeah, shapes were hard for you too, eh?
Yeah.
Don't circles have infinite points, though?
Or none.
You know but what?
Here's the thing.
We're evaluating circles.
Then how can we
podcast?
Do circles unless we're like clasped hands? Oh, did we just reveal that's how we record episodes?
Yeah, we all hold hands the entire episode. Yes.
It's Joel, like a morning prayer.
We are morning prayer. That's very sad. can you tell the audience where they can find episodes where the circle of hand holding is wider?
Same place you found this one.
Holy moly.
You can check us out at secondratesaints.com for all of our past and future episodes. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can check us out at buymeacoffee.com/secondratesaints, or you can use the link on our website. If you'd like to get a hold of us with a question, comment, or concern, you can use the chat feature on our website, or you can email us at secondratesaints@gmail.com.
Lovely.
It's great.
Yeah. For our What Have You Read this week, we're asking you, the audience, what have you read? Because we didn't read anything.
That's funny. We did read a few things, but one of the ones that we did and that we're going to be talking about today is something that we might have covered before.
Shoot.
We have.
Oh, we did. Yeah, sorry.
Actually, if you have something you want to send us, please do. I've read a few books that people have sent in, and others have read others. So send them in. I want to read them, and I hope they're really interesting.
I totally forgot you had a book. I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine. We're going to talk about Oathbringer, the third of the Brandon Sanderson Stormlight Archive.
Nerd.
Woo!
Caleb, why are you calling me a nerd after you talk about things like Eucharistic participation?
You don't even know how bad that sounds.
What?
You introduced us to this series.
This is true, actually.
Caleb introduced us to the first book of the series. He's the only one on the podcast who hasn't read all of them at this point.
I've only read the first book.
That's why I just finished the third book a few days ago. Oathbringer is a book that I don't know what my opinion on is yet.
Really?
Yeah, I really like the first one. Wave Kings is fantastic. I mostly like almost all of the second book, Words of Radiance. And I don't know how to feel about the third book, because I think a lot of the buildup and the interesting ideas are very good. But it's... I really don't like the ending. Pretty much any of it.
Mm.
Yeah. And I... don't like how quickly things kind of move along, especially world building wise. Things kind of just, they bring up an interesting idea, like some of the like there's this talk about, not to spoil things from the first book, Voidbringers. There's a part where one of the characters has to deal with whether or not they want to sympathize with the Voidbringers. It's very interesting.
However, they're demons.
They
think they're demons.
Not really, but
we'll see.
They're kind of just people, but
people have no idea the context of this book, this sounds...
Anyway,
it's insane. Worse if you say the context is Mormon theology, because...
Don't worry, we're getting
there. We'll get there. The Voidbringers, they're kind of like, hey, we were whatever, oppressed this whole time, and now we want to oppress you back because we deserve it, because you did it to us. And then whatever, the main character is like, hey, I don't really know how to deal with this. I'm going to go and talk with them and live with them for a bit to see what their opinions are and if they're actually terrible people. That kind of happens for like four chapters, and then it's kind of out of the rest of the book. Really interesting, especially for that character to go through that. It makes complete sense that they would have that arc, but then there's more plot, other plot stuff that gets in the way. And so there's a lot of interesting ideas brought up that are kind of skipped over for less interesting characters, aka Shallan. But that's just my opinion. I really don't like Shallan.
Oh my homies,
I really don't like Shallan, especially by the third book. First book, she was okay.
Anyway, for people that haven't read this book, why would it be interesting for us to bring this up again? Because we've already talked about it.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of very interesting world building things, which is what everyone talks about. But he kind of gets those world building things from a certain place, which at least he will deny, I think.
He doesn't deny that, no.
He doesn't? Oh, I thought he said that he doesn't connect his books to his theology.
Well, but, no, he doesn't write explicit theology, of course. But there's been quite a bit of work done on, like, no, it's reflects, you know, some of the ideas in the real world.
Right? Yeah. The man who wrote it, Brandon Sanderson, is notoriously at this point a Mormon.
Viciously Mormon.
Very, very Mormon, progressive Mormon specifically. It's very strange, actually. But
you don't think the average Mormon is aggressive?
Progressive.
Oh, okay.
Aggressive.
I heard aggressive.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I don't know if I'd call him aggressive, but he is progressive for sure. And you can see that, like, as much as, like, there's this interesting world that he's built and cool new ideas that aren't in a lot of other books, if you know a lot or even a little about Mormon theology, it's fairly obvious in some parts that things are supposed to reflect that theology rather than, you know, some Christian idea.
Well, I think you just have to know what the touching points are, right? Like his the way he explains the spiritual world, which he builds a spiritual world that's unique to his fantasy.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's kind of the guy who popularized, like, magic systems. Right. And like hard magic systems versus soft magic systems and stuff like that. Like he's the one that's done a lot of the current work of like how we write and view those things. And so for him, like the spiritual world sounds very much like a Mormon kind of spiritualism. Absolutely. The like morals of the world typically overlap more with Christianity, which is
most of the time,
partially true of Mormonism. Not always.
Right.
Voidbringer stuff's a little bit.
Yeah, same with the oaths. That's a bit more Mormon.
The oaths are a big deal.
Yeah, the books themselves aren't like explicitly Mormon. You can read it as a Christian or as an atheist or whatever, and it's not like you're reading like a theology textbook. They're very interesting. They have a lot of great world-building stuff. But Caleb, what do you think about reading Mormon theology or Mormon books?
What do I think about reading by Mormon theology? For a large part, I don't actually care. Same way, like, I'll pick up a fantasy book by an atheist or whatever, right? That being said, though, there is the myths that you tell in your stories are ideological by nature.
For sure.
Right? They contribute or attack belief systems and truths, right? Truths. And so even a poorly, quote unquote, Christian book, if that articulates a bad myth, that's just as destructive.
Absolutely.
If not more. And so I think
putting forward a good myth by a non-Christian source.
Yeah. By a source that may not itself be explicitly Christian.
Okay.
And so like, I just think people should be aware of what you read affects what you think. And so you should be very reflective just when you're reading in general. I don't know.
Interesting.
This might actually speak to the larger reason why I don't get a lot of pleasure out of pleasure reading.
Okay.
Fair enough. It also dips into death of the author stuff, which we don't super need to get into. It's like, can you separate the work from the artist?
Yeah, I'm a 50-50. It depends what you mean.
Well, it also depends on genre, right?
Sure,
like, that's can fair. You separate a work of theology from the author? Yes and no, right? Yeah. Like, depends Ravi Zacharias is probably not a best-selling author anymore.
Who?
Ravi Zacharias.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because of his moral failings that came out after he had died.
Right? Yeah.
That's right. We're pretty clear on that, where it's like, oh, even if he said good things, I think you can find it from a different source.
Sure.
Whatever.
Doesn't mean that his theology is bad, just that he didn't live up to that standard. So,
well, it's almost like, well, then what good is it if it didn't actually produce fruit? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but someone who's wrong 1,000 times can say something right. And that should be held as being right.
Sure.
Just because it comes from a bad source doesn't mean it's not true.
Okay, so no, I don't want to reveal too much about my personal life.
No, that's fair.
Early, I had a guy just walk up to me, and this was at a weird time in my life, and he goes, "Hey, don't take fitness advice from fat people." And I always think of that whenever I like see a theologian that's like, he's clearly gone off on some of his own tangent or whatever.
Right.
You don't take fruit growing advice from people with no fruit. You know, yes, what I'm saying? Right? Like, if you know them by their fruit, then
sure.
And their writing and their theology does not produce that, then you don't.
At the same time, you shouldn't throw it out. Like
what they say
should be evaluated and held based off of your own knowledge and what you already know to be true and through study.
Mm-hmm.
If you get weight advice from a fat guy, like a 400 pound man comes up and is like, yeah, you know what? You want to do crunches all the time.
Yeah.
Only crunches.
Yeah.
You could say, oh, that's crazy, and reject it completely. But maybe you are actually rejecting something that's true. So it's good to take the advice, hold it with a grain of salt, and actually do research into it. That's kind of how I feel with it when it comes to reading even non-Christian books,
mm-hmm.
like Mormons or atheists or like even the Dune series and stuff like that, which is wild.
Yeah. Explicitly anti-religious.
Yes.
Yeah.
There are still good moral truths and ideas to take from those books. However, everything needs to be held at arm's length and taken with a grain of salt.
Yeah. I think you just need to be aware of the myths that you deal with.
For sure.
Yeah, I think when things become about like death of the author regarding theology, I think things get a bit more complicated, especially if you want to take certain claims about how the New Testament tells us to deal with heretics.
That's true.
Right.
But then people go as far as saying, hey, this book was written by a Calvinist. It's not good. And while we might personally be like, oh, that's you cool, shouldn't do
but
that.
My argument was more specific than just that. Yeah,
I know. But people have different levels of tolerance when it comes to what is right and what is wrong. I don't know if it's good if people just don't analyze things for themselves, but reject it based off of who the person is.
Sure. And that's not what I'm calling for. What I'm calling for is just be aware. And also just because, like, let's be real, 20 years from now, nobody's going to be Googling Ravi Zacharias for anything.
Mm-hmm. Right. Except for maybe bad things.
So maybe let's stop pretending like at some point, hey, no, we really should keep diving into his mm-hmm. literature. Cause at some point, you know, there's good nuggets in there. Well, you know what? At some point you're going to find those good nuggets elsewhere. Now, maybe immediately after mm-hmm. his ministry and you're like, no, well, he's still very, very relevant. It's still an importance. Mm-hmm. It's still in the modern back and forth debate amongst people. That's mm-hmm. when you should, as Colton mentioned, like use, you know, evaluate, keep things at our own length.
Mm.
But yeah,
sure. I think if someone tomorrow took Brandon Sanderson's book
mm-hmm.
and they went, hey, there's some really interesting ideas and morals. I think I like this mm-hmm. subconsciously. They probably don't do. I don't know if anybody does that consciously.
It's really hard to consciously articulate myths in fiction,
especially ones that you like.
Yeah.
That's more post hoc. You do that after, but there are good and there are bad myths for sure. And by myths, we don't mean just that, which is false. Just to be clear, it's the underlying core stories that are being told and the moral stories, basically.
Yeah, but morals probably is too simplistic. It probably
mimetic, maybe. Mimetic stories.
Sure. Sure.
I think, I mean, the conversation of myth is wider than that. I mean, it's maybe the second place to baptism on what the podcast has disagreed and covered.
Can you give me an analogy?
An analogy?
Is it like a coffee
pot?
It's similar to a coffee pot.
No, it's it could be a coffee pot topic. I'm not sure. But
maybe that's fair. Yeah. Yeah.
We've definitely done this before where we're like, let's talk about myths this whole episode.
I think myths have to do something to do more with the meta narratives.
It does have to do. Yeah, absolutely.
And then,
yeah.
But that the world of meta narratives just blurs into, like, I think, like, even ontology. Well, like, it's huge.
At the risk of sounding pretentious, myth is how we connect the metaphysical to the physical through story.
I don't know if it's connection as much as communication.
Sure. Okay.
Do we actually just want to have this conversation without Josh?
I guarantee you've done this before, but you know what? I enjoy talking about it. So let's do it.
Are we okay with that?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. We're not going to do.
You guys know a lot more about this than me. I will be honest.
No, dude, you have this whole thing about like English literary structures, and I appreciate that. You're okay. More, I would say, literature focused.
That's fair.
I just love mythology based on a book that I read by Sigmund Mowinkle that kind of messed me up a little bit on cult and phenomenology in the Old Testament. And then it linked to Joseph Campbell.
Yep.
And then it linked to a presentation we did in college on myths. And
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't think it was even on myths. It was on stories, I think. Yeah.
You guys did on Frozen, right?
It wasn't on Frozen specifically. It was on the stories of our culture.
Frozen was the example of what a bad myth is. So just to use that example here in this discussion, mm-hmm. Frozen articulates.
The Disney movie, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. What, is there something else called Frozen?
I have no idea. No. I'm just being clear.
Have you heard about the Frozen myth or the Frozen conspiracy?
No.
That Pardon? Walt Disney was frozen. And so the reason they made a Frozen movie is so when you Googled Walt Disney Frozen, that wouldn't be the first result.
That's so funny.
Anyways.
That's hilarious. Anyway.
I didn't see that one coming. Very That's fun. Good. Why is Frozen a bad myth?
There's multiple problems that are going on, but the main one is I forget the
Anna? Elsa? I don't know.
Whichever one that has the magic powers.
Elsa.
When she's young, like it is dangerous and she does hurt her sister and there's this big like stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And rather than there's this, okay, so I have something inside of me that is either evil or just
dangerous.
The movie kind of takes it as it's just
they want you to forget
it's that neutral,
it's a bad thing.
That it's neutral. But let's just assume it's neutral for the case of the argument. But it's dangerous, right? And instead of her going on a journey of, okay, what does it mean for me to control that which is dangerous? To learn when to use dangerous things for good and when to withhold dangerous things so that evil doesn't happen or bad things don't happen. Like, what's the balance? That's not what the movie's about at all.
Right.
Instead, the movie articulates that no, self-acceptance, that's the way to stop.
Yep. And the full expression of yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not even the stop harm. It's kind of like ignored for the last.
Yeah. Yeah. She just can't harm anybody. Anyway. Yeah. And so that's super common in a lot of children's movies, but of course it is. Look at their culture at the time. It is the myth of our age.
Yeah.
Self-acceptance, self-actualization.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff.
Yeah. Be your best self. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Live your best life now. No, that's a different myth.
Speaking of heretics. Yeah.
So that's the one of the examples that we went through in our presentation at college there. But you can't tell a story without a myth.
I could try.
So if you did try,
it might be incoherent.
I don't know if it'd be incoherent.
I think you can make coherent
It would be entirely original. But I think its lack of ability to connect with the real world would be what's lacking in the myth.
Right. I think we're using story in two different ways here. You could write a plot. You could write a plot that has no connection to myth or story. You read a book that's about pooping on a toilet for 25 minutes and then it's over. That is a story. It has a beginning, middle, end.
I think there's children's books that are just that.
Yeah, that one is actually more mythic, though. That one is actually more mythic.
Okay.
Which is interesting. Never mind. Okay. I'm not going to talk about the myth of poop, but...
Oh, my goodness, guys.
This is a serious podcast.
I don't actually know that.
Because I think there may be a little bit of... This is a dumb topic for us.
It is a dumb topic. Let's move on.
Let's say sitting on the couch.
Okay.
For 20 minutes, right?
Sure.
Or resting, having a nap. There's a 40-page book on having a nap.
Okay.
Right. You say, well, where's the myth in that? I don't know if one is able to communicate that without it just being raw facts. If it's just raw facts. That would be
the point. Yeah.
Then if it's just raw facts, then maybe.
Right.
Then maybe it could be mythless.
Right. The reason I bring this up is because...
But I don't know if that's a story.
It would be a story, but it wouldn't be a story in the way that...
Are facts just a story?
No.
Okay.
The story is something with a plot. But we're using story in two different ways.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. So I want to connect it back to the way that you mean it.
Okay.
The reason I bring it up is because the point of what we're talking about, when we talk about story and we talk about myth, is not that it's just like a movie you watched or a book you read, but rather the purpose and the meaning that's in the book. Not just in its themes, but in just what it is itself. Right? Explain this better than I can, please.
I would say the myth is the level of abstraction beneath the plot.
Sure,
but not even beneath. Maybe it's separate from the plot, I would say.
I wouldn't say it's separate. I think it's inherently part of it. Kind of like your consciousness and self-consciousness are both your brain, but
yes, okay.
They're separate parts of it.
Well, that's where Carl Jung goes when he takes the ego and the id in The Man and the Symbols.
Yes.
He connects it to the human myth. And so you're probably right that there is a conscious plot and then an underlying myth.
Mm-hmm.
And that in some sense...
Right.
The psychological or the I guess you would say the id, or the myth is the breaching of the id. You know what I'm saying?
The ego.
Well, sorry. Breaching of the ego.
This may be where our conversations about myth have broken down in the past.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's say you have that idea. You have a movie A that has plot A,
mm-hmm.
and then underneath plot A, or part of plot A, but like still differentiated, is the myth.
Mm-hmm.
If you have movie B with plot B, some of us are arguing, and I don't know which ones of us.
I don't feel like we've gotten to the point of debate yet. We're just kind of laying up terms.
No, but like in the past, in our previous discussions, that movie A and movie B, movie A and movie B, and plot A and plot B is possible to have the same myth despite being completely different plots.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that there's a, let's just use our term.
But can I,
okay, carry on.
The only thing, not the only thing. One of the major things I'm trying to articulate is that it's not just themes that myth is.
Yeah, of course.
Myth isn't just themes. It is part of the story itself, mm-hmm. how it carries out and what actually happens in the story. So when I say the plot is connected to the myth to become a story, I think that's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. I thought we were disagreeing on that. My bad.
Okay.
No, I think I agree with you. I just, to me, to encompass kind of what we mean, you have to do the whole myths are the dreams of culture. Right.
Sure.
And so, maybe it's not even something with the story, but it's a shared experience between the story and the one observing it.
Mm.
Right? Like that's the whole point is the art is to communicate the,
yep.
the myth, right? That might not even be present in the movie or the story or whatever, but it might be a shared aspect.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
That it, well, I mean, if you look even at stories that we grasp onto, they're stories that have, maybe not, you couldn't say like social relevance, but like they already kind of have the rumbling existing before.
For sure.
I'm too abstract to be of any good in this conversation, so I'm trying to.
Would you say that myth is, not to again use big words, but mimetic memes, that myth is the meme that is being passed on? The idea, the thing that becomes part of the next generation or the group of people that you're trying to get to. An important idea. Because there are some memes and there are some myths that are more important and some that are less important, but all of them are important. Like courage being something to be sought sure. after for its own sake mm-hmm. is a good meme to get across and a good myth to get across in a good mythic way.
Also, I just Googled meme just to make sure.
Sure.
My comments earlier are invalid. It's inversed. Memes are explicitly not biological.
Okay. I thought that was the case, but
yeah. It is a different term for that. I think memes are myths are memes in a narrative medium.
Okay. That's fair. That's what a story is, right?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know if I agree, because I don't know if you can constrict a myth to a...
To a narrative?
To a narrative.
Well, right. What's an example? Because I'm just toying with this. I don't know if I necessarily even hold that, but I'm just trying to... We're just going to flop about on this episode, I guess. What's an example of a non-narratively bound myth? Or is that point... Are we just immediately into philosophy? And that's the...
I think it may become a philosophy at some point.
Okay.
If it's sure. just like the...
If we use the example of courage being good for its own sake as the myth that you're trying to get across.
Yeah.
That there are countless amounts of stories and narratives you can write on that subject.
Mm-hmm.
You can write 5 different books and have a different movie and they all talk about the same thing and they all emphasize the same myth.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all slightly different. They even tell in wildly different ways, even.
Well, I think this is the example between the book A and book B. You can have plot A, plot B, plot C, plot D.
Right.
But they all have the same myth.
But the important part there is that the narrative is the way that you express that. So you can have a different narrative, but the narrative is still necessary for telling it, right?
The narrative is necessary for communicating the myth.
Communicating the myth, absolutely.
Well, that's the question.
That's the means. Asking, yeah. Yeah. That, just trying to put it a different way. Because you can't communicate that myth without either just outright saying it or doing it through some narrative means, right?
Or doing it, period.
Oh, that's another
enacting
aspect.
Enacting the myth, right? And
acting
so
the myth.
Then
living
the myth. So the myth, if we're saying the myth is self-sacrifice.
That is a narrative. Your life becomes a story.
Your life becomes a story. Good point.
Thank you. I feel like I'm at Bible college.
But that only exists retroactively. That doesn't exist in the moment.
But then to partake in a myth, so if we're to use self-sacrifice as the myth,
sure.
taking up your cross, Christ is the archetype for the myth, then we bring the myth into the modern day by self-sacrificial love.
Yeah.
Right? By picking up our cross. Right. You're not... perfectly aligned ideas, but they're close. And to pick up your cross is to participate in the myth. And I don't want to say monomyth because that has too many ideas attached to it.
You'd think it would just be one, though.
You'd think it would just be one idea, yeah, but monomyth is like the whole thing. Man, I got to read that book again. Good book.
Yeah. The myth of the New Testament... The main idea, I think, is self-sacrificial love, the greatest of loves, right?
Well, then it's like, what's the difference between a myth and a moral, right?
I don't know. I think I'd tie it closer to God himself.
That's fair. Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
The myth of the Bible is
if you go with
God.
John, self-sacrificial love is the answer to that. To the thing is you'd say self-sacrificial love and I'd tie it closer to God. And then John would walk in the room and go, that's what he said.
Yeah. There you go. That's fair.
God is self-sacrificial love. Is that what we're going with?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it's like,
that's the point of Jesus. Jesus's love is God's love and his love was self-sacrificial.
Yeah. Well, and it's God is love.
Yes.
And to love not the brother.
Maybe that is the greatest myth is God is love. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
I don't know.
The greatest myth is God is love. Put that on a t-shirt. You'll have conversations for days.
No. I think it's true.
I think someone's going to get mad.
Everybody will have a different idea of what you're trying to say.
And that's myth. There you go.
That's myth. You completely missed the point.
That's fair.
Oh, no. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know if I'd ever attempt to say the main myth of the New Testament.
There's so many.
not only is there so many,
it's like saying there's a whole Bible theology. It's like, yeah, you sure you can point to something, but are you encapsulating everything properly?
That yeah. kind of thing. You are cutting off some fat somewhere yeah. to and make that good. Work.
I heard fat's that fat excellent. People should tell you how to exercise.
Yes. I'm going to tell you how to exercise now. For audio listeners, I'm fat.
Oh my gosh. Calm down.
You're fine.
Thanks.
You go to the gym more than anybody I know. More I don't even know who he is.
Yeah, I haven't even met the guy.
And that's a myth?
No. He's the guy I go for fitness advice.
Jim. When we're talking about myth, what do you think is... So we had a bit of a disagreement over like what exactly myth is, but also in how it's communicated. What do you think are some bad myths for today? Maybe this will jump into how we see what a myth is or not.
And also jump into Brandon Sanderson bit.
There you go.
Yeah, Brandon, this will affect that a little bit.
Because I think we would agree that a lot of myths over the last, like, say, 50 years have kind of led to the society that we have.
Yeah.
I would say probably a bad myth would be the infantilization of the individual.
Yep, absolutely.
That you are a child to be taken care of by the world.
Right.
That you are, honestly, that you're perfect just the way you are.
Yeah,
that's a terrible one. You're not. I mean, think of a more stagnant philosophy.
Sure.
Right?
Can I throw one out there that's going to probably cut both ways? And you guys are probably telling me I'm wrong.
I'm ready.
Life is what you make it.
Life is what you make it.
I think I disagree with you on that one.
You would.
That one, yeah. That one, you're right. It falls dead center and like,
yeah,
I get what you mean. I think
because life's not all that you make it. Now, is there like,
that's true.
Nobody forget. I am very sympathetic towards existentialism.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I do believe many meanings are built.
Sure.
Right. But there's this idea, I think, in the modern day where it's no things that exist in my life, I can construct what they mean and how they function.
It's so interesting because I don't think people actually believe that.
Oh, I think they do.
Yeah.
This is why you can have people that have no articulation, not even this is how you can have 5-year-olds who, when they went to school, they didn't have transgender stuff. When they went to high school, they didn't have transgender stuff. They didn't have any of that blaring noise to their kids because their kids are now 30 some odd.
Hmm.
But when it shows up on the news, they can go, that makes sense.
Right.
And that's our culture has gotten so, has underrooted the systems of what I would say is realism. But I would say it's the myth of nominalism, everybody.
That's fair. Absolutely it is.
Yeah. And so I would say the world is what you make it. That's the only way I can articulate this. Because to a certain degree, there is like the wilderness is out there and you serve to tame. That's right. There. That's true in a sense too. But I think there is a modern myth that is being propagated.
Sure.
That what came before and that which is right now does not bind you in any way.
Right.
You can reconstruct as you see fit.
Sure. I agree with that part. Yeah.
It blurs actually into the Ubermensch myth.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. We're going to have to go into that last bit later, but yeah. I at the risk of sounding completely crazy, I'm going to say sort of how I feel on this particular subject, because I think it's an interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I've kind of joked before, especially on the podcast, that does free will really exist? Do people actually have free will? And the answer is yes, objectively, I think.
Bull.
But subjectively, I think that very few people have it. Not literally. Not literally. Everybody has it literally, but not everybody uses it.
Okay.
Actually, most people, very few people actually use it.
So are you an Arminian biological determinist?
Sort of.
That's so funny.
That's funny. So what I mean by that is that when you say things like life is what you make it, I think people want the perception that they make their life. I don't think anybody actually wants to do it because it requires work. And more importantly, I think that the free will actually expressed is both siding with the thing you agree with and when you disagree with often. It's
okay.
Both.
Okay.
That you choose to do the right thing no matter if it's something you agree with or disagree with.
Yes. So you're saying the only people with true free will are true neutral.
That's funny. That's not what
I'm trying to figure out what you mean.
I'm just the enlightened centrist.
There are so many people nowadays who will see a Twitter post from the president and say, I don't like that. I want to be the opposite.
Yes.
And they expect that that is their expression of themselves.
Yes.
When in reality, they are following the emotions of things around them. They are not actually thinking for themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
they're influenced by everything around
being
them.
Being tossed to and fro, to use Pauline language.
There you go.
By the spirits of the age.
And even people who think that they're somewhat enlightened, that they're like, oh, I choose this because that is the right thing to do. They're still doing it for biological and causal reasons. They have been taught that that is the right thing to do. They have been shown that. Mm-hmm. They aren't actually choosing to do that, but rather that is what they would have chosen because of the influences around them.
You're also blurring into Ubermensch stuff there. Hey?
I know. Hard. I know. At the same time, I don't. Oh my gosh. Maybe I. Okay.
Like for real, yeah, man.
Now I started to think about it.
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, it kind of becomes every action you make is the culmination of your life.
That is true.
Well, and then there's also but to choose to go against the grain, to choose to do things otherwise, that's actualizing your free will. Even if it's against your own.
Well, at the same time, I also believe that when you have that reaction to go against the grain and to still choose to go with the grain anyways, when you have that reaction, maybe I should go against the grain, but choosing to do
what's the difference between that and cowardice? What is the difference between that and cowardice?
That you chose it? I don't know. But the argument
I think
being
cowardice
that
has to be chosen.
Interesting. Anyway. Interesting. Cause that's fair. I think cowardice is easier.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So fair. But very few people will look at something they don't like. For example, they'll see that $5 billion are being sent to Iran for whatever reason. Who knows? And they go,
bombs. Sorry.
Oh, it's being sent tip side down, you know? Geez Louise. But rather that something exists in reality that they don't like.
Yeah.
And then they say, okay, I don't like that, but fine. I have other things to worry about.
Sure.
And I'm going to assent to that even though I don't like it. That takes more will than most other things, I think. I'm not saying that I'm that person. I think I'm more pushed around than most other people I see, but
I don't know about that.
I also think
you are a resident contrarian, so I think
I am the resident contrarian. That's fair.
Which is weird because as far as I can understand, you're saying to accept something you don't like is not an act of cowardice if it's done consciously.
Well, think about it this way.
I'm confused.
You know the people out there that say they're sheep and sheepdogs and wolves and all that kind of thing?
Yeah. Which is
that you're being a sheep by not being aware that you're still living in the simulation, all that kind of thing. Yeah. Then you got all the red pillars and the black pillars out there. And the red, I hate this. The red pillars, they're like, oh, I'm actually awake. I'm aware. I know what's going on and I choose to reject it. But then there's also the people who are awake and still choose to accept it. You know, they've taken the red pill, but they still choose to live in the simulation.
Can I ask an example and then we can cut this out if this is wrong?
To be fair, the Matrix gets a lot cooler when he finds out it's a simulation. You know what I'm saying? Anyway,
so wait, is it a simulation?
Maybe.
I mean, yeah.
Can I ask?
Fair.
We can cut out this example if it doesn't work.
I'm ready.
Okay. There are many who would argue
coffee
that
pots.
It was always wrong. Always inherently to nuclear bomb Japan.
Sure.
Okay. How did we get here from this? Anyway, sorry. That is always wrong. There are many people who argue that. Then there are many people who would go, yes, it is one of the most horrifying atrocities I can articulate, period.
Right.
But it is still better.
Right.
To me, that latter opinion sounds more like the idea of, I've realized I can go against the grain, but I'm going to still choose to go against. I'm going to still choose to go with the grain. Whereas there are so many people that are like, yeah, we just had to bomb Japan because, yeah.
See, I know what you're saying. I
I'm saying, is that example not, is it true? I'm not asking you to make a moral judgment on the right. nuclear bombing of Japan right now.
Are you sure?
I'm asking is that an example of your philosophy?
Interesting. Maybe it confuses muddies the water a little bit.
Oh, okay.
At the same time, I do think that is maybe applicable. I don't know. I haven't fully articulated this idea fully. Now that you mentioned the Ubermensch stuff, I'm now like, oh no. Oh shoot. I'm agreeing with Nietzsche on something.
Well, hey, but I mean, it's not entirely wrong to agree with Nietzsche when he's right.
That's
as
fair.
You mentioned earlier, you know, take his ideas with a grain of salt.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, full circle, man. We're good at this.
Look at that myth.
I don't know how we're going to get back to myth, but the myth is we have a consistent through line through our podcast.
When we're talking about myths that are bad and myths that are good, if we are awake and we still choose to accept those myths for what they are and incorporate them because they're useful or whatever, not even because they're useful, but because you're willing to assent to it.
See, that's different.
Should you do that?
You didn't choose true, which is interesting.
The thing is that
that's to me, that's the odd thing.
The problem is that
I would use the word true,
especially in higher conversations when we're talking about myths and truth. Truth starts to become watered down. I feel it stops becoming what is objectively fact. And that which is, at least, maybe this is just what I've seen on it. I think
you gatekept truth into objectivity.
Truth is objective.
Well, I think, let me rephrase that. Into, why can't I think of, like, historical, factual, scientific truth?
As opposed to?
Metaphysical.
Metaphysical truth is objectively true, though.
Okay. Yes, I would agree.
And
I shouldn't have used the word objective, but no, I meant it.
I'm not trying to say this is what I do. That there are people out there I've seen.
Jordan Peterson.
For sure, Jordan Peterson. He's not the only one, though. When we're talking about myth, is that myth becomes that which is useful. It becomes utilitarian by nature.
Yeah.
Rather than that which is objectively metaphysically true.
Well, because here's my argument, at least. And I don't know.
Joel's it can still be objective, faces. Even if it is utilitarian, though.
I don't think people don't talk about myths as if they are useful. People treat myths as though they're true.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think they're useful if you don't think they're true.
Interesting, because I don't know if all people who talk about myths would agree with you on that. I say all people, if many people.
I mean, the people that talk about myths, there's not one genre of those people.
That's fair.
You know?
Like, you'll have the people that use the argument of... That they'll use this as an example of a good myth is always treat a gun like it's loaded.
Sure,
that's not really a myth. I would say that's
more of a that's more of a meme.
Let's not get I don't know if I'll agree because now I'm confused. But the point all is that seems memes. More like that seems more like a
like
philosophy
it would be,
or something like
okay,
that.
I see
it seems more like a this could be
practical
done.
Theology
yeah.
or philosophy.
A meme, a myth is far more.
It would have to be something that Alec Baldwin believed.
What?
That happened a while ago at this point.
Oh, yes.
Joke about
just
it.
A reminder that the lead character in Boss Baby shot somebody on set.
Anyways, Boss Baby shot someone.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Jeez Louise.
I got so confused there for a second, guys.
Boss Baby's a terrible myth. Continue.
It is a terrible myth. It's also very funny.
I haven't seen it. Alec Baldwin says it's worth a shot, though. Anyways.
Someone died.
Anyway.
just blanked it in your mind.
Or did they?
Oh, they died. Okay,
yeah. Okay. Anyway,
I'm so lost. I got lost in the plot there.
Sorry. I was just giving him really a blank stare. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
Oh my gosh. Jeez Louise.
Dude, you're going to get fired.
Zing. Unlike Alec Baldwin, who's still acting somehow. Okay.
It's not really his fault, to be fair.
Acting?
That acting was not his fault. He just was born into. No, I'm
well,
just
he
kidding.
Didn't have free will, you see.
There I'm
you
just go. Against method acting in general.
Oh my gosh.
Okay,
you shot sorry. Four people just to prep for the role.
That's your dedication. Okay. We might not be able to release this part.
No, this
yeah, is gold.
Cole released this, unfortunately.
Hi, Cole.
Anyway, myth.
You're saying the utility of believing a gun is loaded.
Yeah, it's useful.
Does a myth have a utility if it's not believed?
I don't know if that. Yeah, I don't know if that actually counts as a true myth in like the way that we are talking about it here.
True myth, sure, but
I don't mean true as in. Sorry, I don't think that's an accurate representation of what a myth is.
Oh, I see. Okay,
yeah, I don't think that saying you should always act as though a gun is loaded is an accurate representation of what we mean myth in this conversation, in the larger conversation about myth and culture.
Okay, that's fair.
Because I don't think, going back to our conversation, going back to the comment previously, you said whether a myth is useful or what was the other term you used?
True?
No, correct. You specifically didn't say true.
Right? I don't know.
I don't remember. Yeah, because can myths be true?
Objective, I think is the word I used.
I don't think so.
Maybe not. Okay.
Can myths be quote unquote true? And if you want to qualify what truth means in that question, by all means.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolute truth could be myth.
Absolute truth can be found in the myth. Or is only in the... Absolute truth is only a myth.
That's funny.
Epistemologically, that might be true.
Man, these t-shirts are getting wild. Absolute truth is a myth. Again, nobody's going to understand what you mean by that.
Everyone's going to think you're crazy.
They're just going to think you're a subjective experience.
Maybe I just watch too many things on the people I follow where truth becomes more useful rather than important. And myth ties into that idea that rather we should be teaching people how to live better lives that we want to produce. Like the type of society we want to produce should be what myths guide us towards, rather than that which is like good and true.
So I would take a different stance where I think the purpose of myth is to more deeply experience humanity.
Really?
Whereas, yeah. Really? Yeah.
Sorry, I said
I think so. Right? Because there is, not only is there a shared experience, but it communicates deeper truth than just the narrative aspect, right?
Right. I think it goes beyond humanity. It's not about humans. It's how humans interact with those ideas.
How humans interact without those ideas?
With those ideas.
With those ideas.
With the myth itself and the ideas that the myth carries. I'm abstracting this way too much.
Here's the thing. We talked about the present tense type stuff and how your life is a narrative. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we can draw such hard conclusions between the myth and the people that read or understand them, because mm-hmm. I think they are.
Yeah.
Part of.
Well, and that's what I'm saying about the human experience. Okay. There is a connection there that isn't intellectual.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely not.
And we're trying to identify it, and that's becoming difficult, but I think that if you are using the utility of the myth, it could be becoming a meme. And does a myth become a meme?
Wait. When we're talking about this, when I say that we use the myth, I mean, if a certain idea...
Are you a myth user?
If a certain idea is put forward enough in media, let's say it's 1894 and books are the rage...
They got these new things. Rage,
the newfangled books that everyone can own.
It's a fad.
And there was a lot of people that were like, these kids in their books. No, for real. I'm not
true.
Joking.
It is true.
Like Plato.
You see, that's also true.
Are you talking about Plato? The
written word is a cheat code to my own intellect.
That's so funny.
I believe that.
It's 1894.
Books Socrates. Are the
big new thing. The way that people thought and talked during that day is going to be preserved and passed down through myth, because books and fiction especially became growing more and more. The certain way, the ways and values that that authors had is mm-hmm. what would be passed down. Not necessarily what society passes down, at least in terms of those books. So when we're talking about that which is useful, maybe I'm talking, this is getting into the truth conversation again. Before we get into the truth thing.
Yep.
Are the people who produce modern myths, Are they influenced too much by badness that rather we should be counteracting them with something that's useful more so than necessarily what's true? I'm not saying we should do that, but is that what people are doing?
I don't know. I'm not gonna comment on that. I actually don't know the answer to that question. Fighting the modern myth war is
the Mythbusters.
Dude, welcome to the Mythbusters.
I can't remember what the word is for it. After the American Civil War, there was a de-dixification. Okay, let me rephrase that.
They're doing it to our children. That's right now, bro.
I used the wrong word. So, Dixie. Dixie is how the sort of general cultural term for the South of America during that time. And there was a D, whatever.
No, say it again, please.
No, I'm not going to do it. After the war, there was a re-education, essentially, but not a full re-education. Certain ideas were passed down, taught in schools, shown through books, and given to the kids and the adults of that time so that they wouldn't be pro-Confederate.
Yes.
Same thing happened in Weimar, or not Weimar.
But that's brainwashing.
I mean, it actually is brainwashing, yes. But the idea being that the denazification of Germany, I just didn't want to use denazification because it's what everyone uses. But denazification of Germany was aggressive use of myth and memes to get rid of the ones that were there before.
Yep.
That's what I mean when I say useful myth. Is not only is that happening today, but what is that a good or a bad thing?
Well, I think the utility of it. Sorry, you didn't want to get into the truth thing yet. You wanted to stay in utility, right?
I'm trying so hard because as soon as we get into the truth thing, it gets into what is truth, and I don't want to talk about that.
Interesting.
I mean, we can talk about it if you want to.
Sorry, staying in utility. Mm. Man, if that could, that sounds like a great stand.
I should be writing these things down. We should record this.
It's a good thing this is recorded. It's probably not. No. To your point, was it useful? I don't.
Part of the argument of like,
can I make a weird analogy just for us to, it's so easy for us to articulate. Okay. Well, it happened in the South. It happened in Germany. The depaganization of Germany.
Sure.
Okay. That brought about many myths, I would say, where you have the late church that ends up kind of creating odd, very odd. I don't want to say theology because it's not theology proper.
Sure.
But let's just say Christian social collective cultural myths.
Okay.
Was that useful, Colton, for the depaganization of Germany?
Was it useful?
Because it's not true.
Right.
But it was certainly useful.
I don't know what myths specifically we're talking about.
No, I'm just talking about like the ones that most people end up claiming is like, that's where they got Christmas.
Like Christmas
from.
Trees and stuff,
yeah,
like that.
Stuff like that. Although those are bad examples of it.
Right.
But that you can find examples of that. Now they don't live on as far as most people say today, but yes.
Sure.
Some people say that's where modern saints came from. That's less.
That's so funny.
That's less obvious than people think, but it's also not entirely false.
Okay. Interesting. I think you made a bold statement there that we're not going to get into, but at the same time,
I'm just going to split the middle on that one.
Yeah, there you go. Very Anglican of you. Yeah. The
church split joke.
Is it useful? Sure. I think, at least based off of my own question I put forward, is that it doesn't matter if it's useful. What matters is if it's true. If it destroys society, that's fine.
That seems the opposite of what you have said in the past, though.
Right.
It's like the utility of the thing is important.
It is important.
Right.
I don't think we should do it. Yeah, but if we're talking about things that are right and wrong, just because we do something that's useful and
objectively or like morally,
either way.
Well, now we're getting the difference utility versus truth. Now we're
moving out of the myth conversation.
Yeah.
Well, when we talk about
that's
using myth in a right or wrong way, and if the right way to use it is doing what's true, even if it might destroy society. Is that the right thing to do? And I think so.
Okay.
At the same time, like, for example, if our society is so heavily based on economic pursuit, mm-hmm. and so heavily based on, especially when it comes to the economy is based on growth, mm-hmm. is it better that we teach people, like, the only way to take that idea away, to degrowth the economy and put it somewhere else, is to teach people that some other way is better.
Right.
And the only
stop having kids and that's the modern arguments.
Right.
Right. Stop having kids, stop engaging in economic growth type stuff, and end up, this is where you get a lot of stories that end up articulating that not having kids is actually more fulfilling. And that's the myth. That's the false myth that's being propagated because it's tied to everything that you just mentioned.
For sure. But that would be something that's useful and not something that is necessarily good, right?
I agree.
Right. But that which is good might... it's good to have children even if it's economically bad for you. That is a good myth to put forward, even if it might destroy people's lives, you know?
I think the myth is more people are more valuable than money.
Yes.
That becomes a myth.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? It's not like, hey, you should go into debt for children. That's not the point.
No.
The point is children are not worth money, mm-hmm. right? Money is for the flourishing of humanity, mm-hmm. right? Which is where you get this myth being about human experience. I'm still right. I haven't said anything in a while, but I'm still right.
No, that I agree with that.
I agree.
Thanks.
When we talk about Sanderson and his myths, this is more what I'm getting into,
okay.
I think. When Sanderson puts forward ideas like the church, one of the myths is that the church is not a center of morality, but rather that which is actually true comes from within and comes from comes from like a different source.
Oh, are you telling me the burning in the bosom myth is coming over to the...
Yeah.
Oh.
That's not a very good myth, but there is a lot of useful ideas there when it comes to I don't want to say self-actualization, but rather being part of something that is good rather than being attached to dying societal traditions.
Mm.
Now, I don't think that's necessarily a good myth to put forward.
I don't know if those are mutually exclusive either.
Sure. No, I agree they're not mutually exclusive, but that is part of the myth that's being put forward.
Well, and the idea that that's coming from a Mormon who articulates the idea of abandoning local church structures in favor of hopping onto an entirely new restoration movement built on...
Not even restoration. It's kind of like a...
Yeah, restoration in like idea. Capital R restoration movement. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Of course, that would be the myth that's propagated.
For sure.
Hmm.
However, part of that is the work ethic that the society is falling apart in that Alethi in Brandon Sanderson's book, society is built on conquest and war and the heavy dead traditions that nobody actually believes.
Mm.
And it's sort of this reawakening of, again, a revival, a restoration, capital R, the Knights Radiant and stuff, they're building up, they're reintroducing a better society based off of the book that they have because mm-hmm. Dalinar is in charge of it.
That's why Utah is the best state, right? Am I right?
There you go. But the myth there being that truth doesn't come from that which is told to you, but that which, maybe this isn't a myth, but more mm-hmm. part of the idea, that it's not about the society you come from, actually breaking free of the change of this chain of the society for the moral benefit of the book that you got it from, of the morals you get. Mm. The morals that you get from the book is more important than the morals that everyone else tells you is good, is mm-hmm. part of that story. Now we would say the Bible. I think it's supposed to be an allegory for the Book of Mormon, but that myth can cross over to Christians too.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also the Christianity's relationship with the Bible is far more complicated than I think most people are willing to admit or go into.
Mm.
It's more that the Word of God. It's more like the Word of God in of itself, the Gospel. And then that has been enshrined in the Bible. And so it's not as though like Christians have, like Muslims have the relationship that the Quran has existed entirely and basically fell from heaven.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's boom. There you go. Whereas Christianity is, well, what did the prophet Joel say, right? Well, sure. He said all those things, and then it's kept in the book of Joel, right? Same thing with, like, you have the apostolic deposit, preaching to the gospel and all that kind of stuff. Sure. And then you have their letters. The apostolic deposit is enshrined or codified in the New Testament. And you do have more, like, concrete examples of, like, Matthew's just written. It was made to be written as a testimony. Like, that's the thing. Mm. But Christianity's relationship with its book is far more unique than a lot of people are willing to just, because they think it's, oh, they have a religious text, we have a religious text. Same thing.
Yeah, it is different.
No. Anyway, sorry.
Actually, it is different. It's also very long built.
Yes.
Not by one person. It's not by a group of people. It's by many different people over a long period of time.
But I like what you were saying there, where it's like, it's codified, but it's not even the word itself that is, it almost exists ontologically in the mind of God, right? That we have the word of God in some physical form, but it's not.
I think the Bible's the word of God.
But I. Nobody's saying that's not.
I'm not saying it's not.
Yeah, nobody's saying that.
Okay, comparison. Okay, if you know anything about Sikh religion, they have their 11th guru, is a book, and they believe that book to be the guru. And so they give it a little bedroom, and I'm not trying to be irreverent. I just am not part of that culture. So that's it. But, we don't treat the word of God like that, 'cause it's the living word of God. Absolutely. The Holy Spirit is active in its reading and interpretation, but we don't think it's the book doing that. Right. We don't think in some
There's
way
no this magical is powers
like, we don't think it's
book.
A sliver of God.
Yeah, it's not some tome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the tome
magical,
is God.
Magical tome. Yes. Sorry, like some spell book that you read the words and something happens.
The idea is that the book is not the thing that has any power.
That's
or
fair.
Even the words in the book. It is,
sort of.
Is the underlying reality. Sort of, I guess, but.
It depends what you mean by words. If you mean by, like, the ink on the page.
If you mean the logos, then yes, it is.
It that. Is, yeah.
But the myths, the ideas, and the words that are said and spoken and read are the word of God.
Yeah. I would say that's what's in the inspired.
Sure. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Hey, don't attack the microphone, Joel.
I'm sorry.
So, I think the Bible's. When we talk about myths, this is the problem when talking about the Bible, is that someone will say myth and be like, oh, you just mean it's wrong? That we've already talked about it a few times and joked about it a few times. The Bible contains myth in it a lot. Mm-hmm. For about 2,000 years of history in the book, these myths are perpetrated for 2,000 years until they culminate into Revelation.
Which is like the meta myth.
The meta myth. It is. It's great. It's
everything and anything.
Yeah, for real. Maybe not anything, but yes.
For real is an interesting choice of words.
For real.
I do believe.
Everything is literal.
It is anything and everything for real.
Heaven is for real.
You beat me to it. Jeez,
yes.
Also, lies.
That
book
was
true. That the book is Heaven is for Fake, but
Heaven is for Fake.
A bad myth as well. Actually, that book is a bad myth.
Even death is disappointing. Okay. Crazy take on Todd Burpo. Anyways.
That's the name?
That's the guy's name, yeah. Burpo.
Burpo?
That sucks. I'm sorry.
I mean, if you're going to make up heaven, you might as well change your name too, right? not saying heaven doesn't exist. It's just the book has got some sketchy stuff. But
What do you think are some of the worst myths that we have today, and what should we replace them with?
Didn't we have this?
I think we did but
succinct.
I think we should use this to close out, though.
Okay.
Can we choose a... one we want to throw away and one we want to replace?
Sure. You can go first.
I can go first. I think you're perfect just the way you are.
Great. Bad.
And I think the myth we should replace it with is no one is perfect but God. Which is... It's here's the thing. It might be too complex to be a myth in itself. It has too many connotations.
I think you could just say perfection is divine. And then let that fall out however it works.
Yeah. You could. I was just trying to use something from scripture. But
yeah, fair enough.
Caleb.
I think mine would be whether it's the world or whether it's things. things/the world are what you make it. Because I think nominalism is rampant in society, and I genuinely think that it's one of the major philosophical systems that are underpinning, that they're not underpinning, that are eroding away our systems.
Right.
I would want to replace that with the AA prayer. No. I think it's the Serenity Prayer.
Yeah.
The grace to know what I can change and the humility to accept what I can't.
That's good.
Yeah. Something is similar. I'm using that as a joke. Something akin to that. Something with the idea of recognizing what is malleable and what isn't.
Right.
That some things in this life are malleable and changeable, and whether or not malleable and changeable is the right words, maybe upgradable or transformative.
Would be
better words to say.
Okay.
Because I don't think you can just say, well, I'm just going to change it entirely.
Achieve transformable experiences, is that what you're saying?
Sure. Michael, but also recognize where this is, that's the thing that you can't change.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know. I'm still working on that.
Transformers.
That's fair. I think one of the main myths, I think undergirds a lot of stories is, undergirds. I don't say undergirds. Why do I say that?
I say undergirds.
I like undergirds.
Okay. I'm allowed to be a little pretentious. Sounds good. I just called you guys pretentious. I don't mean that. For some reason, sometimes I say things and I think I sound pretentious, but when I hear other people, I don't think it is.
Indubitably.
Anyway, the,
inconceivable.
Inconceivable. You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Yeah.
It's like another good myth. Princess Bride.
Princess Bride's a great movie. Anyway, the myth I think that I would reject is that life and the actions worth doing are those which have a tangible result for yourself. Now, we have a lot of examples of the other way, but there are a lot of, like, especially more fast food style stories that are like, oh, if you get some kind of gratification out of it, or if there's some good that you can see produced by your actions, that is what makes it worth it.
Colton wants to get rid of the Hamburglar.
I'm sorry, the Hamburglar?
Yeah.
I'm missing something.
Okay,
here.
Sorry. Continue.
I do
fast food myths.
You just said fast food myths, and fast I thought myths. Of the Hamburglar.
Absolutely, there's fast food myths.
That sounds like a great shirt.
Yeah. Arby's isn't disgusting. Fast food myth.
Okay. That is a fast food myth.
Sorry,
absolutely.
I keep interrupting you. I apologize.
No, I think the thing I would replace it with is that some of the best things in life are those which produce no results in your own.
Yes.
Mm. Pursue inconsequential actions.
There you go. No, but...
No, that's not... I know that's not what you're saying.
No, I think that people want to see that their actions have some sort of result or will leave some sort of good legacy. But I think the best legacy you can leave is that it's leading towards a better future rather than it produced a good future now.
Interesting.
Maybe that's just right now, though. So I don't think my opinion on that will change, but my other myth I might remove might be something else. Who knows?
Hmm.
Interesting.
Well, this has been Second Rate Saints on myths.
Yeah. This is... Yeah.
Josh.
Can we call this one Myth Universe?
Oh.
No. Myth Universe. What should we call this?
Josh is going to be pissed.
Going to be so pissed?
I myth you.
He's going to be so mad he mythed this.
But he has a lisp. I don't know if the joke is a lisp.
I don't know. I always think of Mike Tyson talking about myths.
That's good.
No, Kith.
What are you talking about, a legacy? Do you remember that clip where he's talking about a legacy? No. It's like, that's just my ego when I'm dead.
Holy moly. There's like a 12-year-old news reporter that walks up to him and she's like, what's going to be your legacy? And he's like, there's no legacy when I'm dead.
I just die and that's it.
There's nothing after death.
He says that.
Okay, and the best part is, and so I found Mike. It when Ben Shapiro was doing a bit on it, and then Ben Shapiro was recovering it, and then he's like, Ecclesiastes. And so it's Ben Shapiro doing an impression of Mike Tyson reading Ecclesiastes, and this is my Marvel Cinematic Universe a little bit, you know, where it's like,
what in the world kind of timeline do we live in?
It was good.
This is terrible.
We live in the, hey,
we live in a world where a professional violinist
That's make so fun of Mike Tyson because he owns one of the largest.
Professional Jew makes fun of Mike Tyson.
Professional Jew makes fun of Mike Tyson. I would watch that.
Hey, I did we serve a loving God. He has given us the best timeline.
You know what? That is objectively and mythically true.
I agree. Take us out.
If you want to find all of our past and previous episodes, you can check that out at secondratestates.com. If you missed
the previous episode.
That's crazy. You can check us out at secondratestates.com for all of our past and future episodes. If you'd like to support the podcast based on the events of this episode, thank you. But you can check us out at buymeacoffee.com/secondratestates. Or you link on our website if you want to have any questions, comments, or concerns, or myths that you thought you'd like to get rid of out of modern culture. Man, this sounds crazy.
Let's destroy modern culture.
Or ones that you'd like to add or see manifest within narrative.
Yeah.
You can just email us a light email.
What are important things?
That isn't going to be, what is your desire for the human experience?
Tell me how you'd fix humanity.
In two concepts. Okay. And I ran so far away. What? Can you give me a good clip?
I don't want to stop. That was too good.
I'll miss you.
That joke kind of bombed.
I hate this bit.
This is a good bit.